Now we end the day on settlements and curtailments. Paper 15?
Yes.
What fun. Take it away.
Yeah, thank you. The committee received a request to clarify the accounting treatment in IS 19. The submitter raised two issues on when a plan amendment or curtailment occurs during a period. Issue one is whether an entity should recognize the measurement of the net DBL as the event date to determine net interest for the post-event period. And issue two is whether an entity should revise any actuarial assumptions for the calculation of service cost and net interest in the post-event period. Please look at the illustration in Appendix A on page 20. In normal calculations, current service cost and net interest are calculated using the assumptions at the beginning of the period. If a plan amendment and curtailment occurs, net DBL is remeasured to calculate past service cost accurately. The issues are about the calculation of current service cost and net interest if a curtailment or plan amendment occurs. The issues don't affect the amount in the statement of financial position because the amount of net DBL is remeasured and the assumptions that show significant changes are updated at the end of the period. Overall, these issues affect disaggregation of current service cost, net interest, and remeasurement gain or loss within only one period. The outreach result is presented starting on page 13 in this paper. It implies that the diversity existed before the amendment in 2011 and could exist even after the amendment. Pragmatic approaches were also observed. Many think that BC 64 of IS 19 is clear, but some think that the result of BC 64 is not sensible. Some experts think that it takes more time to observe general practices after the amendment because such events are not very frequent. Staff recommendation is summarized starting on page 18. From a viewpoint of interpretation, we think that an entity should not update its assumptions to determine current service cost and net interest for the post-event period because BC 64 of IS 19 explains it. The ISB thought that the irregular measurement shouldn't affect the remeasurement for current service cost and net interest to be consistent with the accounting for other significant changes in assumptions. Moreover, we think that an entity should not update net DBL as at the event date to determine net interest. We think that net interest should be determined in accordance with paragraph 123 and BC 64 of IS 19. Consequently, we recommend to the committee that it shouldn't add this issue to its agenda because these issues were addressed in BC 64 of IS 19, which was revised in 2011. In this paper, we focused on the interpretation in the current IS 19, although many think that BC 64 of IS 19 clearly supports our views. Some think that the result of BC 64 of IS 19 is not sensible if a significant curtailment happens. The outreach also implies that other diversity or difficulty in detailed calculation could exist, as described in paragraphs 72 and 78 of this paper. As described in agenda criteria assessment, we note that the future PIR on IS 19 could be the right place to address these issues with other related matters. We would like to ask whether the committee agree with the staff analysis and recommendation. Thank you.
Before I turn that question to the committee, I'd like to comment to Kami and Manuel. On the visual, Appendix A, I would like, I don't need permission, but I would like your concurrence with giving this to the IASB Educational Department and asking them to find a home for it, because it really does help, helped me in the understanding. With that, then, the question is, the tentative agenda decision, which is Appendix B of the paper, and I open the floor for comments. Tony?
I struggle a bit with this. And I think Akimi said it at the end, I wonder if it will lead to sensible accounting. I understand what BC 64 says, but I do think it's inconsistent with B9IS34. And I think I can think of, give a couple of examples where I think it will just lead to accounting that some might say fails the common sense test. So the plan amendment or whatever, and it could be an amendment, it could be a curtailment, it could be a settlement, closes the plan to future accrual. This model would say that you keep recognizing service cost although there is no future accrual in the plan. Now, I know the submitter said that the number of people who earn benefit is not an actuarial assumption, but there's nothing in 19 that says that, and there's nothing in the tentative agenda decision that says that. So if you don't update your assumptions around service cost accrual, you're going to keep accruing service cost, although it's completely closed. Another way would be to say, well, let's say it's a settlement. You've settled the plan. Except the amount you've settled is the liability at the date you did the settlement, not the liability at the beginning of the year. So you keep accruing a finance cost for the balance of the year. Or turn it round. Maybe the plan amendment pushes the defined benefit obligation up, but you keep recording the finance cost at whatever it was at the beginning. All of those things, to me, fail the common sense test. And I think that paragraph B9 of IS 34 says you take into account significant fluctuations, significant market fluctuations. And I think that would tell me that I should make the change, because otherwise, let's say, if the liability's gone away, I keep accruing a finance cost, that then gets trued up at the end of the year through other comprehensive income. And I just struggle to see how that's useful. So my preference would be to address the inconsistency between BC 64 and IAS 34. I would turn it round and come at it and say I don't think BC 64 gives you a sensible answer.
Isn't this the age-old problem between saying, no, you get to set your assumptions and everything once and live with them until you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Between that on one hand and saying, at the other extreme, we could have said you update them every quarter. And
you
we
could,
don't but, do that.
But what we say in 34 is we use the word material. And routine true-ups, I agree, you'd leave it at the beginning of the year. But what this gets at is a significant plan amendment, a curtailment or a settlement. And I would draw a line between the fact that I make a routine revision to one of my assumptions partway through the year. I think that's quite different to saying I'm going to make a significant plan amendment or do a curtailment or something like that. So I just think that there's a difference between the two.
So would you also adjust for a significant change in market interest rates partway through a year? And then at what stage does the change in market interest rates become significant to trigger that?
I think that's a judgment. I think that's simply a judgment. I mean, there's always an element of judgment in setting the actuarial assumptions. And I think what IAS 19 gives us is the ability to adopt a pragmatic approach that says there are always going to be true-ups. And to the extent that it's a true-up like this, then you don't need to revisit. To the extent that it's a true-up that does this, then I'm not sure continuing to run something through the income statement for a finance cost when you don't have a liability at all, and truing it up through OCI makes sense.
Would you do that just in the case of one of these events, Tony, or would you do it in the absence of this event if there was a significant change in the assumptions? Because I think that's part of the problem, because once we start to make some of these distinctions, then it becomes a bit arbitrary when we decide to make the update in one case and not the other.
And I agree that there's a judgment.
Yeah.
But I've always looked at 34 as it uses the now I'm getting the words wrong, whether it says significant or material or whatever it says, but it includes a word that would allow you to make a judgment about what is big enough to go back and revisit the assumptions at the start of the year.
Okay, I'm going to start with Patricia and then work from her around the table.
Well, I tend to agree with Tony, because in the situation where there is a curtailment or settlement, because that is an event over which the entity has control. Unlike interest rate fluctuations or changes in the market value of the assets over which the entity has no control, and you can true up going forward. But the entity has made a decision to settle or curtail the plan in the middle of the year. So it seems appropriate to me that it should do that. And when the board discussed whether or not assumptions had to be updated quarterly, I don't recall them thinking about settlements and curtailments. My recollection of that discussion was interest rate movements and fair value movements, not settlements and curtailments. But I could be wrong. They may have discussed that, in which case, forget I just said anything. But I don't remember discussing the changes in assumptions in relation to transactions. And this is a transaction, like a business combination, which clearly you would change the accounting for the pension plan if you did a business combination. Not the acquirers, but certainly the acquired entities would change. And so to me, this is a transaction.
I don't recall either the board getting to that level of granularity. So, Cass.
I agree with staff recommendation. Understanding the argument, it's not useful, maybe, that request to keep the original assumption at the beginning doesn't seems make sense or may not be useful if something curtailment settlement happens. But I'm not so concerned about settlement case, because the number of employees needs to be reflect after the past service cost recognized, so no service cost anymore. So I think some issue happens makes big curtailments happens and the assumption may change, and it may represent faithfully if we change the assumption. I can understand that, but I think that was known when this standard was prepared, and the board discussion in this PC clearly a paper of that prepares position that reassessing and the assumption during the year is costs us a lot. So I think from cost benefit standpoint, this BC exists. So until we know the actual impact of that, maybe unfavorable impact for that certain curtailment or change or settlement, I think we should wait until we see any issue arise. In that sense, I support the staff view.
Scott?
Feel bad for Akemi. She seems to have been given the
issues that require a very detailed technical analysis to figure out what the standards say. Like the last one, I think the paper has the right technical analysis. I read the standards amazingly to say you do not update. Even though you have all the numbers, you do not use them.
I think that's what the standard says.
I think that's what it says. So I think that the analysis of the standards is right. I don't like it, and I think we should change it. I don't often think U.S. GAAP got anything right on pensions, but I think it did here when it says you use the beginning of the year assumptions, you don't update them unless something happens, and in order to account for the transaction, to use Pat's word, you need to update the assumptions. And if you've already done that, well, go ahead and put them into the calculation. And I do think the whole reason why you're not required to update quarterly is cost. Kaz is absolutely right. But when you have a curtailment, when you have a settlement, when you have a plan amendment, you already have to do the updated measures. So the only additional cost is basically to book three different entries. Because you're already doing the measurements. So since we're already making you go through the cost to get the updated measurements, I would say, spend the extra $300 or 200 euros to use those measurements to, get the financial reporting better for the rest of the year.
Laurence?
I'm completely in agreement with what Tony expressed. I do believe that it's not so clear, that the answer from the literature is not so clear, and the interaction with IS84B9 is not so clear. And I would note that your reasoning wholly relies on BC64 in IS19, which is a basis for conclusion that has not been approved by the IASB. It's not authoritative literature. I would remind that in Europe, BCs are not even translated. So I think that it's putting, and you describe this as a principle in a basis for conclusion. I have problem if principles are in basis for conclusions. I was questioning, if an entity decides, are entity prohibited from doing remeasurements when they decide to do so? And if they decided to do a remeasurement or recalculation on the date of curtailment, would they be prohibited then to adjust subsequently? So what would be the point of going where you are going if anyway an entity that decides to do an irregular valuation could do so, because it's not prohibited to do so. The frequency for valuation is left to the company. So I do believe, like Tony, that the issue is not one of frequency of reporting. The issue is one of whether you take account or not of significant events. And here, a significant event has occurred. And I think that what is written in B9 of IS84 says that pension costs, you adjust for significant market fluctuations since the end of the prior financial statements, and for significant one-off events such as plan amendments, curtailments, and settlements. It is written per se. Lastly, there is one thing, an assumption in your paper, or an hypothesis in your paper, that is that the number of employees is not a demographic assumption. And clearly, this is not discussed anywhere. So before we agree that this is not considered to be an assumption, I think this would be worth a debate, because otherwise I could read your agenda rejection
as saying that number of employees is an assumption you will not revise.
John?
As you know, this is my last meeting, and I hate that we go with a decision that makes no sense. I think if it didn't happen in the last 6 years. if I terminate half of my workforce and my ongoing pension expense remain the same, well, that's a little bit of that's a challenge. I would like to suggest that maybe there is this scope to finish around what I think the technical analysis might be right if you look at BC64, but built on Patricia's suggestion that maybe you don't change the assumptions that you don't control, but you reflect events from the date an event takes place. In which case, if you do have an event that takes place, like a settlement or curtailment, that reduce your workforce, from that point on, I think I would not see that as a revision of assumption. It's just your workforce goes down, so the scope goes down. From that point on, I would reflect both the reduced workforce and the reduced liability, if that's the case. So my interest expense and my but I would not, I think I would not, on the basis of what is existing in IAS 19, I would not revise my assumption. In other words, I would still keep the interest rate that the discount rate that was set out at the beginning, or I was going to say a return on plan asset, but that's the old time. That's my take. I think we should not go with something that makes no sense. I think economically, not reflecting the reduction of the workforce in the example that I say, if it's significant, and it can be, would make no sense. I can't believe we would go there.
Perfectly capable of reaching a conclusion that makes no sense, but Martin? Not to imply that Martin is in charge of that sort of thing, but Martin?
Probably you speak a little bit in examples, and probably that's the direction Laurence is arguing. I'm not sure. We on this slide here we see the net defined liability, but probably let's talk in terms of service cost. Imagine I've 100 employees, thus I have service costs of very very expensive employees 100 million a year. Okay. So now I have a curtailment and I reduce my workforce by 50%. So what would be the implication for my service cost? Would in quantitative measures that mean that keeping all other assumptions equal, I would be allowed to reduce my service cost by 50%? Or do I have to stay with this service cost of 100 million? Although I reduced my workforce by 50%. That could be one of the scenarios. Another scenario could be, okay, in a quantitative term, I reduce my service cost to an equal ratio, so to say, without adjusting the actuarial assumptions beyond, which is fluctuation, mortality, and so on. So this could be another scenario. For me, the first one would be a no-go, to be honest, because it makes absolutely no sense in economic terms. The second one, to keep actuarial assumptions more or less with regard to mortality and all these other issues constant over a year, I would say one could find arguments for that. Specifically as pension is long-term calculations and so on, and I have to start with assumptions. The question is where and at which times I really have to recalculate these kinds of assumptions. But out of the discussion, I have no idea in which direction we are tending to go. Whether really some of us would say, okay, it would be correct to keep the service cost by 100 million.
Fair question. Andrew, did you want to come in too? Your light quit flashing. I didn't know if you...
Well, I think the points I'm going to, I would make have been made already, so I won't repeat them looking at the clock. But I share a lot of the concerns that this is possibly a supportable technical analysis, but it doesn't give sensible answers.
Okay. I'm going to ask the question in terms of what you think the right answer, which would, that's not necessarily the answer that's consistent with a reading of 19 and 34, but what you think the right answer is. The best accounting, and we will leave it, however that turns out, to the staff to implement that and bring it back. So you're due for another 83 paragraphs. Potentially. I see four choices. We go with the staff conclusion. It's always choice one. Choice two is we go with the alternative I think Patricia suggested, which is you don't remeasure except in the case of the occurrence of an event that the entity controls. So the entity decided to cut its workforce in half. The entity decided to cease accrual. Those are all events within the control of the entity. I suppose to be very macabre about it, if half the employees died, you'd say, despite the fact that your workforce declined by half, that wasn't in your control. So that illustrates the transition to event approach three, which I would attribute to Tony, which is the big events or big things, may not even be an event per se. Big changes ought to be reflected. Alternative four is to wait and see what happens.
Three would be to revise everything on the period, including the assumption.
Two standard deviations, or whatever it is you're, in your judgment, constitutes.
Curtailable settlements, plan amendments, and significant market and fluctuations, because that's what 34B9 says.
Scenario, in an impact scenario, you would update not only the demographic events, but also the market events?
I think you have to update everything to do a revaluation.
Everything. Okay.
You got to recalculate everything.
Got it. I just wanted to just
as if it were a year end. Exactly.
So the only difference between your the second and third approach are external market conditions.
Right.
A significant change in interest rates, a significant change in asset values.
Primarily going to be interest rates.
It could be a significant change in demographics outside the control of the entity.
And we have no fifth scenario where we. and we have no fifth scenario where we say, okay, we reduce the service costs to in an equivalent ratio, but we stay with mortality rates and so on.
That's what we.
I gotta write these down now.
I think it's okay. What the submitter suggested.
Okay, we got too many people going on at once here. First preferences. For whom is this first preference, the staff's conclusions? Pardon me?
First, the difference of first and the fourth one. Last one. Do nothing.
Fourth one is do nothing and wait to see how things develop.
First one is also wait to see.
No. The first one says what it believes the standard requires. On the basis of the analysis, the committee determined that sufficient guidance exists.
So basically, that's do nothing.
Well, but. Okay. Alternative four is not even to say that.
Yeah.
Instead to say that we need to wait and observe practice that develops around the amendments. So alternative four would not even say what this says. It would say, we don't know yet.
Okay, I see.
So it would be
I'll leave it to the staff. What does...
Yeah, if...
You would update the number of employees, but you'd keep the other assumptions the same.
So it's update demographic, but not financial?
Not demographic,
no.
Oh.
No, number of
employees. Number of
employees.
Number of staff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the staff.
It was not reflected in assumptions.
It's number two.
Yeah.
But does that one also include recognizing the expense under the beginning of the year or after the update?
You'd recognize the expense. After the update, you'd recognize the expense for the number of staff that are still there.
We got too many people talking.
You'd recognize the liability, of course, under all senses.
So we're just talking about updating the liability, not recognizing the expense thereafter in this first vote, right? Issue one or issue two? Right?
Okay.
Let's reboot.
Yeah. Issue one and issue two. Which one
is which? Issue one is how do you update the valuation. Issue two is how do you recognize the expense after you update the valuation, right?
What's the effect on the liability and the date of expense?
Because under Tony and Pat's assumption, I would assume that you would update, just by the very nature of what they're suggesting, that you would update the expense based on the revised liability. So you would update. But I thought based on the staff paper you wouldn't update. Because you were going, are you going through the 34 or the 64?
Updating what? The interest expense?
The interest and service cost expense.
I don't think
we
update the service cost to reflect the reduction in
right.
the number of employees, but we don't update the interest expense because 19 says you keep that constant at the beginning
right.
of the year.
Okay. And theirs too would do both.
Yes, I think so.
And then four does nothing in stage two as well, or in T equals two afterwards. But then I don't get what five was.
There is no five.
Okay. All right, just clarifying. Okay.
Okay. For whom, he, she, it, or they, is the staff's recommendation the first preference? One, two? Okay. All of the next two require a control alt delete. And the only issue is when you press the buttons. Second choice is control alt delete, reset everything, if it is an event that the employer controls. For whom is that the first preference? Last alternative is we need to wait and see what happens as practice develops. Senior citizen update. Alternative three is again control alt delete, but it's for big stuff. And we leave the judgment of big stuff. And so one distinction, as I express it, between two and three is a small-ish plan curtailment might not trigger because it doesn't meet the two standard deviation or whatever we say.
You actually described three earlier as transactions.
Okay, let's keep it then as transactions within the employer's control plus big stuff. For whom is alternative three your first preference?
We get a second preference?
I'll get there. That's five. Alternative four is we don't know yet. We have to wait and see. So it would be a complete holding pattern for the time being. For whom is alternative four your first choice?
One.
Okay. I think, now, who got, who won? Vanna?
Okay, I'm John didn't.
John didn't vote, but the alternative that seemed to get the most support
is three.
Was the Tony bigger than a bread box? It's a very old Americanism. You wouldn't recognize it otherwise. But it's the events within the employer's control plus significant other things would trigger a complete remeasurement. I'm not going to allow questions until we have a vote. Who would accept that as what you believe to be the superior accounting result? Show of hands. As opposed to something that you said made no sense. So.
This made more sense than no sense.
Okay, how many did we get, Mike?
8 out of 13.
8 out of 13. That wins. Now, 9, John?
Yeah,
okay. We'll entertain questions about what that means. Martin and
Sandy. I have a question with regard to significant or big issue. Because in general, we have already a kind of definition of a curtailment, because a curtailment is already more than the ordinary, say, fluctuation and employee adjustments. So if you fire, so to say, some employee, it does not necessarily mean that you have a curtailment. And then my question would be, the Tony Big issue, what is it more than a curtailment?
Well, I would have said, I think, what other people have said is, if you've got a settlement, you've got a curtailment, you've got a plan amendment, you've got to do the numbers anyway, so you might as well account for them. So if you've got one of those, fine. The one that strikes me is perhaps possible more than any of the others is there's a significant change in interest rates. That's the one that I would see being a significant market fluctuation. You could have something significant that affected the demographic assumptions, but I think that's probably a lot less likely to be something that I would see as significant.
I agree with what Tony's saying, but we just had that, right? And I don't think people updated, right? So I don't think I agree that that's the right answer. I'm just not certain it's the winner in the sense.
No. I asked the question of what you think the best accounting is, not what you thought practice was.
Okay.
So,
then I think, okay.
Okay. John?
Yeah,
I want to win that.
I didn't raise my hand because I thought that if I have 10 plans and I settle one of my plans, which is a significant event, the remaining 9 plans, I don't see why I revise the assumption for the remaining 9 plans.
I don't think we said that.
Plan by plan basis.
Yeah. Everything you do in life is
okay,
plan
so,
by plan.
So, okay. I have a question. Is that compliant with US GAAP now? I think it will be. Is it the same thing as US GAAP?
US GAAP would not add in the big. I believe it would only be the transactions that would require. Because US GAAP relies on whether the standard already requires you to update the measure. And the standard only requires you to update the measure in order to handle curtailments, amendments, settlements. So it doesn't add in big market shocks.
Can I just come in, Wayne, on this?
Yes,
just to clarify what we mean by number three. When we're preparing interim financial statements, we only have to do the assessment at one point in time. If we are suggesting that entities should update assumptions at any point in time that there's a significant change, are people going to continually need to make that assessment? One of the things that we were trying not to do when we were amending IS 19, or the board was trying not to do, was to require an entity to continually assess what the assumptions were in order to make those changes. And I'm worrying if this is probably going against
I don't those think considerations. So. The principle that I, or the analogy that I would reach, is you don't have to continually update your assessment of fixed asset impairment. It's triggered by something that happens that's beyond the ordinary. And yes, we have some, you guys may have some problems in trying to articulate that, but I don't think this leads you to continuous assessment. I think Tony's articulation, which I've nicknamed two standard deviations, but would not lead you, would very rarely lead you to an assessment without an employer-triggered event, would be my expectation. I understand your concern, but I don't think. Okay. Kaz, very last call.
I just want to make sure maybe the scope of what we're going to do. Because it seems like we are going back to the kind of developing the standard stage and coming back of the cost-benefit analysis. And I think it could be beyond our committee's work. Maybe go back to the board. So I just want to make sure what we are going to do. It's not easy task to remeasure every quarter.
I understand that, and I was very careful to say that the staff has to then articulate this into what steps would be necessary to accomplish it, and they will bring it back to you at a future meeting. I won't promise July, but at a future date yet to be determined, and you'll have a chance to look at it. And then you'll decide then, and that analysis will certainly talk about cost benefit, but your decision will be made then after you've seen what they come up with. Okay. Thank you very much. Does the staff have significant direction, as we used to say? Not significant. Do you have sufficient direction? Okay. I believe that's the end of today's agenda.